Manavir, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Good to see you, Charles.
Nice to see you.
Yeah.
Hey, so you introduced us to Windows Azure
right. Pretty
much a year ago.
Right.
So I wanted to come back and just get a sense of what's going on. What's happened over the year? Where are we? What's the future?
It's hard to imagine that it's been a whole year. I was telling my wife last night, we had some change in the family. We had a baby, and I was just telling her that it's funny because when I think about Windows Azure, it's kind of the same thing. We introduced it last year. I did the video with you.
Yeah.
It was this new baby that had just arrived, and I was trying to explain to you what it's all about and
exactly.
What it's for. We've had a whole year. We've got all this feedback from people. The baby's grown up, right?
Okay.
And a year ago, I thought the baby was going to be something. When she grew up, baby's decided to be something. Now that she's grown up, so it's time to tell the world.
Excellent.
She's grown up, and what does she really want to be, right?
Yes.
So I think that's the stage we're really at, right? I think we are ready to come out and reintroduce the platform to people and give everyone a sense for what have we built, where are we going, what is this targeted towards, what problems is this meant to solve or not solve.
Yes.
And all the features that have come out this year and that are coming out that we've just announced, what is the rationale behind these things, right?
Exactly.
And what is the path that we're on? So I think that's something that's probably worth talking about.
Oh, absolutely.
Bit, right? So, to just recap a bit, like they say on ER, previously on ER, right?
Yes.
Just to give you the
previously
the 2 minutes, right?
Yeah.
I think, so what did we say last year? We said, we have this thing called the cloud, which is basically a set of computers, servers, geo-distributed across the world. And you have these applications that you want to run on this set of servers in one data center across many data centers. And you need some kind of software that controls all these servers for you and takes your code, deploys it on the right servers, starts them up, monitors their health. When servers go bad, brings in new servers, keeps your code running. And that's really what the Windows Azure platform was about. We always said it's an operating system by analogy. Just like you have an operating system for one PC,
Yes. Now
we have an operating system that manages a whole cloud, right? And that was really the point of the platform. Now, if I think about the way this has sort of come about, right from the beginning, from day one when we built this platform, the way we started was from the bottom up. Okay, so we said, we've got all these servers. On these servers, we've divvied them up into virtual machines using the technology that we have at Microsoft. Mm-hmm. And what we're basically trying to do is allocate out and rent out VMs mm-hmm. to people to run the applications, right? And that's really what we've got at its rawest form. But we wanted to really be careful about how we introduce the cloud to people in a very controlled way. So what we did was we had all these VMs at the bottom, but on the top we put this whole layer, sort of a programming layer, right?
Okay.
And a programming model, if you will. And we said, this is the only controlled way in which you can use our platform. So we had all kinds of restrictions, like you have to write ASP.NET code. It's got to be medium trust. Mm. You can only have 2 roles in your service. You can only have this number of instances. So we were pretty careful about the facilities that we exposed, I think when we started off last year, because we wanted to give people sort of this gentle introduction to the cloud. And we wanted to show people this environment that is robust, stable, scalable, and you come in and start deploying your apps. And I think that's gone pretty well.
Okay.
You know, we've had a large number of customers, way more than we expected, actually.
Really? Excellent.
We've had full data centers of applications, we've got a lot of great feedback from people.
Okay.
Both feedback that we may not have asked for at 3 in the morning saying this doesn't work.
Sure.
And also feedback that we asked for. We did surveys and, the like. And what we've done over the course of this year is we always had this powerful platform underneath.
Mm-hmm.
And this year we've really been on the path of exposing more and more of it, of really opening it up, because we've gained in confidence as to, how robust our system actually is underneath.
Okay.
So if I think about Windows Azure today versus Windows Azure a year ago, Windows Azure a year ago was, Come use our cloud and experience it and in a controlled environment where you can do certain things. And this year, Windows Azure is a lot more about, we've got a very similar environment in the cloud to what you have always expected and got from Microsoft and other places.
Mm-hmm.
and we're ready for you, right? So you can build the kinds of applications in our cloud that you could build in other places before, right? You can use the same programming models. You can use the same paradigms. Last year, when we talked about storing, say, tables or structured data in the cloud, we introduced you to a new table system that we built, which we have and we worked on a lot. But this year we say to you, we've got a relational database in the cloud, which is something you're familiar with and you would like to use, except that it's designed for the cloud now, and it's more scalable and amenable to the cloud, right? So that's really the thing we've tried to do in the last year. We've just opened up the system so that it's a much more familiar experience. And I think the path that we're on as we go forward, really, with this platform is, it should be a place where you get to build your applications in a very familiar way, right? And it's just a different environment that you choose to run on. And sure, some things will be a little different because the environment is different, but by and large, you'll be writing and building your applications once, and you just choose whether you want them to be in a Windows Azure cloud or you want them to be somewhere else. And that's sort of the path that we're on.
Excellent. So. Now, I mean, of course, there's challenges in all of this, right? I mean, we're essentially, you know, we have one of the largest data warehouses in the world in Chicago.
Yes.
And I was just reading an article about that today, or, you know, a few weeks ago, whenever it was. But what are some of the challenges? I mean, number one, there's two questions I have for you. When we first introduced, remember it was Red Dog and you let the world know it's Azure?
Correct.
We, you know, you drew up nice pictures on the board and we really kind of talked about the operating system analogy as you're saying today.
Correct.
But in some sense, it is an operating system.
Yes.
But the things that it does are different than the one that's running on your client.
Correct.
I mean, it's essentially, it's a server and you deal with virtual machines. And we've had a conversation on C9 that people will see about the lowest levels of the system.
Correct.
So I just wanted to ask you, I mean, Windows Azure, it's an operating system by analogy.
Right.
That's how you presented it.
Yes.
But it's also actually a cloud operating system.
Correct. Right. And there's a lot of challenges, right?
Sure.
So, I mean, the first one I would mention, you alluded to the data center in Chicago.
Yes.
Right. So, I mean, that's something that from our point of view of the operating system, yes, you can say it's a challenge, and I think it's a great facility and opportunity for our customers, right?
Yeah.
Microsoft is globally distributed. We have data centers everywhere. Windows Azure is very much a platform that has spread to many of Microsoft data centers. Mm-hmm. In fact, one of the things we have done this year and that we're continuing to expand on with this launch is going into these different data centers. So we have a presence. We always had a presence in the U.S. We've expanded that into Chicago. We're also going into the EU, right, with a presence there. We're going into Asia with a presence there. So this gives our customers the opportunity to locate their applications where it makes sense for them, either because it's close to your customer or because, you know, there's geopolitical considerations, right? You may have requirements that you need your data in a certain place, for instance. So we have this facility of geolocation in our platform where anytime you deploy an app or you create some data, whether it's a relational database or blobs or what have you, you can go to our developer portal and select, you know, which geolocation you want to be in based on those factors, right? So the challenge that comes with that clearly is how to manage all these different environments and keep them all going. And I think that's why from the beginning, Windows Azure was built with this model of automation. Our whole model, the reason we wanted to build Windows Azure was that the only way to scale is through automation, right? So everything is automated. The way we do our deployments, the, you know, the configuration of what is the hardware sitting in each of these data centers, all of that is, we have software running there that is figuring all this stuff out and bootstrapping these data centers up. This is all just a push-button operation that we do every time we bring one of these new data centers online. So it is certainly challenging, but I think it's something we paid attention to right in the beginning. Mm-hmm. So we've kind of got this turnkey thing going now for how to increase our presence in different places. And it's just a matter of spinning up the right hardware resources in all of these places.
Excellent.
So, yeah, that's certainly a challenge. I think another challenge, because it is a platform, I think one of the things we stressed last year was, you know, it's not just a piece here and a piece there, you need this facility today, you need that facility tomorrow. It really is a platform with different facilities that we think you will use in conjunction. as a customer, right? You want some servers where you want to run an app. You want some database where you want to host your customer inventory. You want some file servers or blob servers where you hold your videos and your photos, right? And you really, as a customer, want to use these things together. Like, you want to be able to say that, you know, I want my app to be, say, in the U.S. Midwest, in San Antonio. Mm. But my app's only going to function well if the database that it hits is in the same cluster, right? So that I get very low latency and high throughput. And you can have a whole bunch of requirements like this. So another challenge that, if you will, that we had to address that we have done in this platform is all these parts of the platform that we built, they're really truly coordinated, right? There's a built-in intelligence across the different services. The database service knows when it gets requests coming in. It knows that it's getting requests from a compute app that's running in Windows Azure, right? Okay. The Windows Azure servers, when your app is making calls out to a database, it knows that you're making calls out to a database that's located right there from our platform. And there's a couple reasons for this. One is, of course, just performance and efficiency, but the other reason is that it allows us to offer different models to the customer for just pricing, right? If you're running a compute app in Windows Azure and you're hitting a SQL Azure database from our platform and you're geolocated, clearly an incentive we want to offer you is that you don't have to pay for the bandwidth that you incur going across there, right? And so that's something that we're able to track and take advantage of and offer to the customer because it's one platform and everything is going through the same pipeline.
Right.
So that's another thing we went and did, I guess you would term it as a challenge. Yeah, it's funny because, you know, you ask challenges and there's a whole, if I think about the things we did this year, right?
Yeah.
There's a whole set of things we did that on the one hand you can say we overcame challenges, but I think on the other hand are really facilities that we wanted to give the customer that we've gone off and done. So billing,
yes.
I think is another thing that, clearly, when we came out with this platform, we talked about we want to go with the model of consumption-based billing when we do launch it. But we weren't actually charging people anything, and we weren't really doing that. And clearly, this year, we've spent a lot of time building that whole system up so that we're in position to actually bill people. And the challenge, if you will, or the thing we want to accomplish was, again, we did not want to have a system where, you know, you're running compute apps on the platform. You've got a billing model and some billing system. You're hosting a database in SQL Azure. You've got a billing model and something different. You put in a credit card here for compute and you put in a credit card there for your database, etc. So instead what we built was one complete pipeline and system, right?
Excellent.
So the system we've got for our commercial platform is you go to one place. It's the Windows Azure platform launch point. You create an account there, you put in your credit card information, whatever else, you're automatically provisioned into all the different parts of the platform. You're automatically provisioned into SQL databases, into compute, into Windows Azure Storage, into .NET services. Then you go to the developer portal, it's a single sign-on, you have your one live ID that you sign in with, you create one project, and within that project you can create a SQL Azure database and a Windows Azure compute and all of that. So all the parts of your project are together. Anytime you want to see your usage or your bill, you sign in there, you see one data sheet right there, right? Your one bill across the platform. Hey, this month, you know, I did this many gigabytes of bandwidth into SQL Azure for my database. I did this many gigabytes of bandwidth into my compute app. It's all in one sheet. You get one bill.
Excellent.
Right? One statement. So clearly, yeah, we did a lot of work to make that whole integration come together, which we think is a feature of the platform, right?
Absolutely.
That hopefully people will find beneficial. So yeah, that was another challenge that I thought I would mention there.
So I mean, you know, over the past year, how have people actually been using Windows Azure? I mean, when I first played with it after our interview, I went right to my office and created a website, said, "Wow, I'm running this on Azure."
Yeah.
But what have people actually been doing?
Yeah, that's a great question. So And you understand, I can't give you exact numbers, but I can certainly tell you a lot without giving you exact numbers. So there's three really there's four categories of things I would lay out of how the usage has gone. The first category is just we put the CTP out there, right? And we started handing out tokens and aligned people into the platform. And we've had, you know, I don't want to give exact numbers, but let me just say that we've had, you know, tens of thousands of customers is an understatement for the number of people we've had running applications on this platform, right?
Excellent.
Many of those people have done what I would say is investigation, and many of those people have actually launched real live services that you can go hit on the internet today, right? Those people have used our platform in many data centers in actually many locations in the world, right? So we've had a lot of coverage, not just in one location, but in many different locations. So that's one aspect. So we've had all those people. And not just have they given us feedback from things like the forums, etc., but we've actually gone and done studies and surveys, etc. And we've actually got thousands and thousands of responses to our surveys to understand what people are actually doing with the platform. And I would say that even though those people individually, a single person may have thought, I'm using two VMs and I'm playing around. For us, every single customer we've had in that bucket, we've treated as a live 24/7 customer. So if there's ever been a situation where one of those customers' apps has been offline for any reason, we've considered that a live-site outage. And people have woken up at 3 in the morning and got going to resolve that situation for them. And I think by and large, the platform has done fairly well for those customers. So that's one bucket, right? Second bucket we look at is we've had a set of customers that, whether you call them premier customers or tap customers or what have you, that we've worked with very closely one-on-one, external customers, people like Coca-Cola, Kelly Blue Book, etc., right? So we have a program, we have a good number of several dozen such customers that are running pretty much live things on us today. For instance, Kelly Blue Book is a good example. If you go to their website today, a fair chunk of their traffic is actually going to something hosted on Windows Azure. So there's a long list of such people that we're showcasing and talking about at the PDC event. And I think they're all running live businesses, as I said. So there's a certain level of support, etc., that we offer them. So that's bucket number two. Bucket number three is Microsoft internally. We have started this process in earnest this year of moving more and more of the Microsoft properties themselves to Windows Azure, right? It's a long road. We're not all the way there yet. We'll be getting there. But there's certainly this year, there's a number of Microsoft properties that have launched live on Windows Azure. Actually, a really good example I would give you is there's a product called Microsoft Home, which is an energy-based service that we've launched that anybody can go to today, and you can basically see what is the energy usage in your house, etc. That thing is running on Windows Azure. A month ago, there was a request that came into Microsoft with the advent of H1N1 that Microsoft, can you do something to spin up a website to educate people about H1N1 and what they should do? Right? This was a service Microsoft wanted to put out. And literally they had to get it done in a couple of weeks. Right, so that thing was built on Windows Azure because you can provision and spin up things so quickly. Right, so that's one set of things. There's parts of the platform itself, like .NET services, the service bus, access control, that is completely built and running and launched on Windows Azure now, right? So that's one set of things. And then some of the more established, bigger things. We've been working very closely with our offerings like Exchange and SharePoint. So Microsoft has a whole online platform where you can go and get Exchange and SharePoint online, so you can run those things in the cloud.
Yes.
And we've been working very closely with those people to get all that stuff onto Windows Azure, and we've made a lot of progress on that front, actually.
Great.
So we're very much on a path to doing that. And then finally, one of the promises of Windows Azure has always been, because this is coming from Microsoft, and we are very focused on enterprise customers and ISVs from the beginning, we've always been working on scenarios where these things can happen together. So for instance, can you run an application in the Windows Azure cloud, but it's actually using an installation of Active Directory in your own company to sign people in, mm-hmm. so that you can do line of business applications. So a really good example from Microsoft is, you know, we have the Giving Campaign, which we run every year. And there's, as you can imagine, the Giving Campaign runs for a period of a few weeks. So every website that you build for the Giving Campaign, there's going to be a few weeks where the traffic is going to be really high, and you're going to need lots of servers. Mm-hmm. And then the rest of the year, it's sort of on the back burner and steady state. So this year for Microsoft's Giving Campaign, like the entire auction website was actually built and run on Windows Azure.
Excellent.
And literally what they did was they launched it with a few servers, and then in real time, the first day when they watched the traffic increase, they just went to the portal, you know, increased the number of servers, hit go. Within a few minutes, they had a whole bunch more servers, and you could see how the performance of that website just improved. And the reason they were able to do this was because Windows Azure is fully integrated with the Windows Identity Foundation that connects you to Active Directory, etc. So Microsoft employees, when they go to this website, it was their Active Directory credentials that would be used to sign them in and show them, you know, what have you bid on so far and what have you bought and not bought, right? Mm-hmm. So Microsoft internally, yeah, there's this whole set of things we've been doing, right, to get traction. And then the fourth bucket, which I think from our point of view is a really important bucket of adoption, is the platform itself. Mm. So I told you about .NET services. But in fact, it is the case that a large portion of the Windows Azure platform itself is completely bootstrapped on Windows Azure. So our storage system, our entire storage system, blobs, tables, queues, is just an app, a geo-distributed app running in Windows Azure. We have a new service this year that we developed and brought in over the course of the year, which is our entire service management front end. So when you go to the portal and you say, you know, scale me up from 5 instances to 10 and you hit go, what's actually happening below that website is we have a service running in the cloud, which is doing all these service management operations. It's our front door, if you will. Hmm. This itself is a service, a geo-distributed service that is running on Windows Azure, right? So we have a whole pipeline for monitoring and diagnostics now. For our own services and for our customer services, we provide you this facility. We capture all your logs, performance counters, all of that. There's a service running in the cloud to do that. Mm-hmm. That itself is running on Windows Azure, right? Mm-hmm. So we've really bootstrapped ourselves very heavily this year. And that's a really good indicator for us because those services have a lot of scale. Obviously, they're 24/7 because they run our platform, right? Mm-hmm. So that's sort of the fourth bucket. So those are the different things we've done to really push this platform forward, I think, in terms of adoption.
Excellent.
This year, yeah.
So listen, I mean, I'm an operating system guy. You are. I mean, that's your history. So I want to take the analogy, kind of play with that a little bit.
Yeah.
So when you think about a general purpose operating system like Windows, you know, it has all the basic things that you need, including the platform, which is what has made Windows successful.
Correct.
Right. In your sense, I mean, do you see people, like, so here's what I'm really trying to get at, right? Do you see different classes of potential customers where you have, for example, the shell types, the Win32 types, people that build applications that you can use?
Yeah.
Do you see people actually, the service types?
Yes. Yeah.
So, I mean, I could see in Windows Azure being a service developer where I just want to build and offer you something that doesn't present any UI. You just use me for compute and data.
Yes.
Do you see this kind of stuff happening?
Yes, I think so. And I think the way I would put it is that if you look at successful platforms over time, and clearly we hope that Windows Azure is going to be a successful platform, you don't have a successful platform without apps, right? And there's some set of apps that a company like Microsoft can build, mm-hmm. but we would hope that the vast majority of apps that enhance this platform are actually built by our ecosystem, right?
Yes.
By our partners. So I want to answer that question for you in a couple parts. One is, we are launching with the platform as part of the commercial launch, a marketplace, right? And what you're going to see today is the first incarnation of this marketplace, which is more about discovery. So any developer, when you go to our developer portal, right? You can do one of two things. If you've built an app on Windows Azure, you can list it in this marketplace. And there's a nice path right from the developer portal. You go, you sign up there, and you list your application. And similarly, you can go look at what other people have listed, and you can consume those things. Maybe somebody's built a nice building block or distributed cache that you want to use, for instance, in your app. You can go pick those up, right? So we've built this marketplace, And the reason we've done that is because we really want to encourage this ecosystem, right? The second thing I would say is that although there is a certain set of things that we provide to bootstrap the platform, really we are trying to follow this model that we are building the core platform. And we want to leave it to the partner ecosystem to really enhance and develop this platform, right? So that, number one, we cannot envision all the different things people want and find useful. Number two, we've always found it to be really beneficial, you know, a win-win situation where the ecosystem really comes in and builds these things and provides and offers solutions to other people, right? So, you know, for instance, if I were to throw some things out there, right, that I think would really enhance the platform, developer tools, right? Microsoft is a developer tools company. We build developer tools. We've done all this work with Visual Studio to enhance the platform. But I think there's no limit to the kinds of developer tools that third-party partners and vendors can come in and build on top of our platform and offer to customers of the platform, right? That's one thing. Services. You mentioned services, right? Whether it's a distributed cache or some photo sharing service, or a data warehousing service or a BI service, right? We provide all this logging from the platform. I can imagine somebody coming and building a BI service, saying, "You want insight into how your app is really behaving? Here, we can slice and dice it in all these ways, right?"
Nice.
So we really envision third parties coming in and building all of that stuff. And so what we're doing is we're doing all the plumbing, right? Mm-hmm. Make it easy for you to run the apps, give you a marketplace so that if you build such a BI service, let's say, you can list it, you can sell it to other people, right? You can offer it in different ways. Remember that one of the core tenets of Windows Azure is we don't just give you VMs. We can actually run your app, right? Mm-hmm. Now, when you talk about marketplace and third party, the value of that immediately comes out because let's say I'm a vendor and I've built, you know, a photo sharing service. And now I want to sell that to other people, right? Mm-hmm. There's two models for that. One model is I've got my single photo sharing service running. Mm-hmm. It's got some APIs. You can buy my APIs and you can use them. But there's another model, right, which is that I don't want to share your single copy of the photo sharing service with 20 other developers. I want my own, right? Mm-hmm. But in order to get my own, I have to be able to run your service.
Yes.
How do I run your service? I don't know how to run your service. But on Windows Azure, the platform already knows how to run that service, right? It's just a matter of pressing go. So Windows actually enables this model where what I can do is I can build this service once and I can sell copies of it to everybody because it's really easy for other people to run their own copies of my service because Windows Azure already knows how to do that. There's a service model and everything and you just press go, right? So I think really where we want this platform to go is we want people to come in, build services on top of our platform and offer those as value-add services to other people. So
yeah,
so we definitely envision that. And then, of course, we envision just applications, right? People building, you know, new kinds of scenarios, right? I think, you know, Coca-Cola is somebody we've been working with. That's a great example of a scenario where they're looking at different ways to link up their distributors in ways that they haven't done before, mm-hmm. right? Because they have access to the cloud, right? And so that's more of a finished sort of application built on the cloud.
Excellent. And I mean, the other thing that I like, the promise of Windows Azure because of the, essentially the scale, is computation as a service, right? I mean, it's not as sexy as being, you know, this beautiful website with all these services and stuff, but I might want to just be a video processing service hosted on Azure.
Correct.
And instead of getting the YouTube experience where you have this, you know, the nice sort of the file that you upload that, of course, gets shrunk to be scalable on the web. But in some sense, it would be nice to offer, you know, take advantage of the computation you guys can you offer.
I mean, I think I agree with you. I think that's a big part of Windows Azure. And getting that scale and getting it very quickly. You know, in fact, one of the partners we've been working with is called Risk Metrics. And what they've been doing with us is They do have this requirement that they want to spin up, you know, thousands and thousands of servers very quickly. So we've been working with them, and what they were able to find with our platform was they were able to create some scenarios where very quickly, they were able to spin up thousands of servers, right? And I think the positive experience that they had with us was they started with a few servers, mm-hmm. and they had a scenario where they would take those few servers and, you know, do the deployment and get their whole system up and running. And then they went to 1,000 servers, and then thousands of servers, and they found that actually the thing scaled out so that the total time from start to finish didn't actually change, right? Mm-hmm. Regardless of whether they wanted 20 servers or 2,000, right? And I think their scenario is kind of the sort of thing you were talking about. It's computation on demand, right? Yes. They've got to do some very intense computation very quickly for somebody, and then it's done, right? And they can come and go, right? Expand and shrink very quickly,
yes.
right? So I think that's certainly a target for the platform. And I think with examples like that, we've really proved out this year that the platform can handle that. Right? And you can do that kind of scale very quickly. Yeah.
Very cool. So, I mean, you know, what is your sense of what we're going to be talking about next year?
So, yeah, that's a good question. So I think, you know, I alluded to it, I think, a little bit by saying that we're sort of opening the kimono and, you know, exposing more and more of the platform with the features this year, right? Mm-hmm. So I would put it to you this way, that at the end of the day, what we've got in the cloud is we've got virtual machines and we've got Windows Server, some variant or the other of Windows Server sitting on those virtual machines. And we're really, the path we're on, really, this year and that we will continue on next year, is we're trying to say, in the cloud, there's really two parts to the cloud, okay? The positive part to the cloud that we've preached from day one, and that we've tried to build it from day one, is you really need to be able to manage your services at scale in the cloud. And so for that, we've given you facilities like a service model. So you draw the diagram of your service, we take care of all the deployment and all of that, right? That's something we've had from day one. But on day one, we also coupled that with a controlled environment where there was a certain set of facilities you could get. The path we're on now is we're trying to get you to a place where we say, hey, guess what? You've got your VM. You've got the full power of Windows Server in that VM. Whatever things you're familiar with from Windows Server that you're used to doing with Windows Server in your other environments, you get to do. But we still give you these nice facilities to do your deployments and the like so that you have this very manageable environment, right? Mm-hmm. So the two big things that we are working on for the coming year, that we're looking at exposing in the coming year, one is actually giving you administrator access within the VM. So today, you certainly have full trust within the VM. You can run, you know, you can run any piece of code you want. Today, you can run C code, Java code, what have you. Mm-hmm. Today, you can already treat your VM as a server and host any kind of web server you want. So for instance, you can go, you know, you can go to the Sun website and get the latest JRE. You can go get the latest version of Apache or Tomcat. You can install that on a Windows Azure VM, and you can spin up for yourself, you know, a web server that hosts Java apps, right? You can already do that. Today we still run all applications in Windows Azure in user mode. Right, which means that there are certain things you cannot install on the box, for instance. And we recognize that for legacy applications, that can be a bit of a challenge, right? So we are very much on a path towards providing administrator access within the VM to all customers, at which point, really, you will be able to install and deploy pretty much anything you want in one of your VMs in the cloud, still coming in through a service model and all of that so that we know how to deploy you, how to find resources for you in the cloud, etc. Mm-hmm. So I think that's one thing we're working on. The second thing that we're working on that goes hand in hand with that is what you can think of as a managed VM role. Okay. Now, what do I mean by that? Mm-hmm. What I mean by that is that our model today is we have set up a VM for you already. We've put the operating system on the VM for you. Now give us your application bits and whatever data you want to put on that VM. We'll put that on the VM for you and start you up. Okay. Now what happens with this model is that if you don't have administrator access, you're coming in a little late in the day. Certain things have already been set up in the VM, right? So step one is administrator access, which means now you can run any kinds of install scripts, whatever you want, in the VM. But it's still the case then that every VM you get onto, you're running those scripts and doing all of that setup, right? So with the managed VM role, we're creating a world for you logically where we're saying, whatever it is you wanted to do on the VM, right, to create what you would think of as a VM image, you go off and do that once. And at the end of that, we've got a complete VM image for you. And that's what's going into our repository. And now, you want 1,000 of those, we'll spin up 1,000 of those. You want 50 of those, we'll spin up 50 of those, right? Notice that this is a logical view, right? There's a lot of questions that can be asked and answered about where exactly does this happen? Mm-hmm. Do I go do this on my desktop and ship you an image? Is there a service running in the Windows Azure Cloud that creates the image once? And this is all stuff that will come later. This is all TBD.
Sure.
Right? This is not what I'm here to
talk about. At the end of the day, it's a VHD, right?
At the end of the day, it's a VHD. Exactly. At the end of the day, what we're saying is we are now going to offer you a model where you can create that image once, and then we put it on as many servers as
beautiful. You want. So one question I would ask you in this case, because I mean, when you, again, going to the OS analogy, you use the term user mode. That means you kind of protect.
Correct.
Sort of the core of everything, which of
Correct.
Course is the kernel.
Correct.
And the Windows Azure does have a kernel.
Correct.
That's
Correct.
The thing that maintains Correct. All these
Correct.
VMs.
Correct. Correct.
So,
yes, that's what we call the fabric controller.
Yeah, the fabric controller.
Correct.
So, in some sense then, if you're going to give people the access for administrative access, essentially, it's not kernel mode in the sense that you're giving them full power
yes.
over their virtual reality.
Correct.
Right, their virtual
Correct.
Machine.
Actually, this is... I can explain this really well with the diagram. Can I use the whiteboard?
Please, I was waiting for you.
Yeah.
That was the way I was going to get you up there before this ends, man.
You should have told me earlier. Okay, yeah, I'll do this with the diagram. I think that'll be helpful. So think of it this way. We've got a number of servers in the cloud, and in every server, we've got the root OS. Okay. Each of these. And then we've got a bunch of VMs. Right, so this is a guest, etc. And we've got one service that we run in the cloud, which is called the Fabric Controller, which is a standalone service, which is aware of all these different servers.
Okay.
And all of these root OSs work in conjunction with the Fabric Controller, and they create basically what is effectively the kernel of this operating system.
Hmm.
Okay? So, I didn't do a really good job of drawing it. But what I'm trying to draw is, there's two entities here.
Okay.
The Fabric Controller service and all the root OSs.
Okay.
This is really the kernel of Windows Azure.
Okay.
This is all within a protection boundary. Then we've got all these guests. The guests are where we're running the customer's application.
Hmm.
Those are outside the protection boundary, right? So when we talk about administrator access, we're talking about administrator access within the guest, right? So within the guest VM, you can do whatever you need to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there's a very strong protection boundary between the root and the guest, right? And there's actually a protocol. So to get to a little more detail, in every one of these roots, we have something called an agent, which is actually a piece of code that is a proxy for the fabric controller
okay.
that is sitting on the server. So this is the agent is what the fabric controller uses to get things done on every server.
Mm.
So the fabric controller can issue a command to the agent saying, reboot this box and put a new version of Windows on it, for instance.
Okay.
And the fabric controller talks to the agent to get back information about what's the status of all the hard drives on the server, and has a particular hard drive gone bad, and then I need to replace it with something else. Okay. So these guys are within this boundary of trust, if you will. The agent is just an extension of the fabric controller. But that boundary very much ends at the root OS. And then the guest is outside that boundary, right?
Okay.
So even when I talked about giving administrator access, access to customer apps, mm-hmm. it is strictly in the guest.
Certainly.
And not down here.
Excellent. So, yeah. I mean, essentially what you're saying is, you know, you can't blue screen Windows Azure.
No.
But you could blow away. So, I mean, let's say I go and I install
I mean, that's the beautiful thing about virtual machines, right? Yeah. I mean, if I do something in a virtual machine that causes it to blow up, it doesn't destroy the thing that it's actually running.
Exactly.
That's the power. That's the only reason we can do this.
Yes, yes. It's really, you're right. It's really the technology behind virtual machines that is, you know, the primary component of the security boundary. But having said that, I'll also say that within Windows Azure, we have many, many layers of trust. And the VM boundary is just one of the things we use. So to give you an example, another layer that we use is when you have an app, right, you have a logical boundary to your app, and there's only certain endpoints through which you can accept traffic.
Right.
So again, how do we make sure that people from outside your app cannot actually come and hit, you know, individual VMs within your app? The reason we're able to do that is, again, because we have the firewalls program. We have, in the root OS, we have a thing called an IP filter, which is basically, you know, filtering the packets that are going across out of the server, right? And again, because we know from the service model what is in your app and what is not in your app, we're able to control that traffic as well, right? So we have actually about 8 different layers of security, and the VM is just one of those.
Absolutely. I mean, and that's a really important point. It's not something that we really addressed last year explicitly because it was sort of just the launch and you wanted to see what people thought. But the fact of the matter is, in reality, if I'm an enterprise, right?
Yes.
And I talked to Dave Thompson, he was on Channel 9 recently. Yeah. He talked about turning, you know, software into services, right? Yeah. Be it Exchange, whatever. And I just go, hey, I want to just pay for you guys to deal with all the headache, but I want all the benefits.
Right.
So, you know, I guess my point is, in that model, I'm going to want to own my part of the cloud. It's no longer going to be this sort of distributed, free.
Yes, I understand what you're saying. It's a multi-tenant world, right? And
yes.
I think our viewpoint from Windows Azure is, you know, there's multiple levels of multi-tenancy, and every customer is going to be comfortable with a different level of multi-tenancy.
Okay.
Right? And this platform is really designed to support all those different levels of multi-tenancy. And it's just a matter from our point of view of when is the right time and what's the right model to expose these different kinds of multi-tenancy. But to give you, to list some of those, for instance, the sort of the vanilla Windows Azure Cloud is, it's a multi-tenant environment where you have your own VM, right? You are never sharing your VM with somebody else, but you're multi-tenant on servers and on clusters. Because the same server may have a VM that is being used by another customer, and the same cluster may have servers that are used by other customers, right? Now, from there, you can start going up further levels. There's a level which says, I have my own cluster, right? There's a level which says, I have my own cluster, and it's actually physically on my own location, right? Maybe you drove something up to my parking lot, and it's physically, I can see it out my window, and I know I'm not sharing with anybody, right?
Okay.
And so I think from our point of view, there are different delivery mechanisms, right? And so we can slice and dice this different ways. What we've done is we've built at the core, what we think is a pretty reasonable multi-tenant environment, which is based on virtual machines. And then you can always package up from there, right? So imagine a different model which says, you know, The way we make you multi-tenant is you have your own cluster. And that's the model from day one, right? Now, how do we become more granular than that? That's going to be challenging, right? So we start with this level of granularity, which is you've got your own VM, and we can always make bigger and bigger packages of isolation.
Right? Excellent.
So,
very cool.
Yeah.
And so, finally, I mean, what are some of the, you know, we talk a lot about Windows Azure being mainly this immense virtualization framework. But there's always hardware.
Yes.
And so hardware is evolving, hardware is changing. You're going to have maybe 1,000 cores. I mean, you're going to have a lot of compute underneath, which could have good benefits. But, you know, thinking out a little bit, you know, there's going to come a point where if I'm a user and I say, hey, I need, you know, 100,000 nodes because I need to do this massive astronomical computation.
Yes.
I'd love to see NASA and other places start using Azure.
Yes.
That would be cool.
Yes.
Scientists want that. So, I mean, I know there's also high-performance computing, which is not the same thing, but at some point, who knows, right?
Yeah.
I mean, talk about that.
Yeah.
I'm not exactly sure what my question is.
I know, yeah.
Let's see if you can figure it out.
Okay. Right. So I'll give you a couple of answers. I don't know if they're the answers to the question you were trying to ask, but I'll give you a couple of answers anyway.
Sounds good.
The first thing I would say is, you know, Microsoft has a whole organization that actually handles our data centers, right? And we do all our hardware allocation and hardware projections and what's the next queues we want, etc. And the nice thing about Windows Azure is that it is now so mainstream in terms of where we are going in the company, that Windows Azure is completely plugged in to that whole process, right? So any new innovation, whether it's a new kind of load balancer or a new kind of router, right, or solid state disks or anything like that, right, all those innovations get fed into the pipeline for Windows Azure. And we have a team that is constantly evaluating all that hardware and trying to figure out, okay, what's the right, you know, ratios of this to that that we should arrange. Like, we're constantly revisiting, you know, for our storage purposes, right, what's the right mix of this, of this versus that, and we keep innovating and we keep experimenting with different configurations. So the one answer I would give you, which is sort of an abstract answer, is that any hardware innovation that is coming in that we become aware of as a company or that we work with other people closely on, all gets fed into the Windows Azure pipeline.
Excellent.
Right? So none of that is going to get missed by Windows Azure, right? I guess that's one question, one answer I would give you. And then the other answer I'd give you is, I agree with you. You mentioned HPC. At the end of the day, these are all different forms of parallelization and et cetera. And so certainly we are working closely with those folks. And in fact, you know, it's too early to predict or make any concrete statements about what we may or may not do. But
I think
it's a safe thing to assume that the innovation we're doing in Windows Azure and the innovation we're doing on those fronts are not happening in isolation.
Good.
So, let me just say that.
Yes, communication happens at Microsoft,
believe it or not,
even between different kingdoms.
Believe it or not, it does happen.
Well, Azure is actually,
it's amazing because so many different groups at Microsoft have come together to make this happen. So.
Absolutely. Hey, always great to talk to you, Manavir.
Sure, my pleasure.
I haven't even said it yet, but congratulations, everybody, for the commercial launch.
Yes, we are really excited. The team is super excited.
Outstanding, yeah. So we'll come and see you next year.
Yeah,
next year. Or maybe somebody behind this camera.
Yeah. All right,
man. Take care of yourself.
Okay. Thank you, Charles.